Hey, what's up? It's Teen, it's Escape from Plan A, and I've got Mike and Steve. What's up, guys?
Hey, how's it going?
I got nothing. I mean, I got no agenda. I got no agenda. Just shoot the shit. I got things on my mind. You guys got things on your mind, you know? I'll tell you what I'm up to.
What's going on?
Okay, so one of my friends, so, you know, we know all this is coming. One of my friends got shit canned. You know, right after he bought a house, you know.
Oh, he just bought the house.
He just bought the house.
Oh,
he just,
shit. Okay.
He just put a lot of money into the renovation. And, you know, exactly what the fear is that you lose your job.
That is the fear.
Because you're going into a recession. And then right away, the housing market has seized up. He's on the West Coast. The housing market has seized. So it's not going to be easy to unload that house if he needs to.
And now he has a bunch of sunk capital in it.
And yeah, he's got a bunch of sunk capital in it. I mean, hopefully he's got runway. Too, right? He's been working for a while, but he's got a family. You know, he's got two kids to raise. And so, you know, I mean, I feel for him, man. I've been there, not with the kids and stuff, and not quite at this level, but like, I feel for him, and I'm talking to him. And then today we were talking. They're just talking to me because I'm like, you know, I'm asset light, right? Mm. And I was telling them, dude, have you heard of this place called Malaysia? And they never listen to me, right?
You're kicking a man when he's
down. No, I'm not. I'm giving him hope.
You're giving him hope.
I'm giving him hope. I'm saying, like, look, this is what I'm saying, right? The big picture thinking is look, living in the United States or Canada is shit. We all know this. It's super expensive. To live a nice lifestyle, to live in the parts of America that are good, you know, convenient, located in a desirable area with desirable people and desirable businesses and whatever, is fucking expensive as shit. We know this.
Yeah.
Right. And if you want to live, you know, your median, you know, if you look at the median numbers in America, the median house is now $460,000. The median income is $60,000, you know, whatever. Think about what that buys you in America. I mean, unless you're in a very low cost of living area, not much. And
yeah, I mean, or you have a house that you're, you know, that you purchased 25 years ago that you can just live in, like your parents' house or something.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, maybe, yeah, you can, yes, you can be grandfathered into the good life.
Yep.
But I was saying to them, guys, look, there's this place called Malaysia. And I'm going to send you some realtor links.
And this beautiful condo in central Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah.
You can purchase.
Penang Island.
Which for $500,000 is 1,800 square feet. Brand new. Four bedrooms.
Dude, I worked it out. High-end condo developments. I'm talking the really high-end shit. The kind where like there's a model of the building in the lobby.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. $250 a square foot.
That is cheap.
Whereas in New York City, I would say
1500.
We're close to 1200 in the boroughs and 1500 in Manhattan, or maybe 2000 for high end stuff. You know,
my place was just over 1000.
1000, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you can get, you know, you could get a, you know, 250 square feet. I mean, $250 per square foot. You could get a 1,000 square foot condo, which is not a small place by New York City standards anyway, for $250,000. And their minds were blown. And because, like, not only is it, you know, affordable from the American perspective, you're right on the beach. I mean, it looks like you walk out and it looks like a tropical paradise. It's like blue water.
There's a river running through Kuala Lumpur, is there? I think so.
Yeah. Well, I was looking at Penang, but yeah.
Oh, Penang. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, KL is like where there's businesses and shit. It's like the New York City of, of Malaysia. But Penang is like sort of like a chill beach town kind of thing.
It's like the Munich to Berlin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, here's my thinking, guys, is like, I look at this stuff, like I look at what's going on in place like Malaysia. the infrastructure is rapidly improving. They're going to have high-speed rail. You're going to be able to take high-speed rail from Penang all the way down to Singapore, and they're probably going to build it up north too. Crisscrossing Southeast Asia, Thailand, Vietnam, Myanmar, into mainland China, etc. This whole area is ripe for development, modernization. The infrastructure is going to be way better than the United States. We're on the downward slope, and I can't imagine that the enormous privilege of the U.S. dollar is going to remain in place for that much longer, where an American, any old American, can just waltz in and buy, you know, high-end real estate like it's nothing. I'm not saying that it's nothing, but I'm just saying relative to what you would have to pay in America for something similar.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the relative cost of U.S. real estate has only recently really skyrocketed, right? Like 5 years ago, you could still buy a pretty house.
There was still like the bust after 08 that was still being worked through.
Not in New York City, though. It was already insane.
Not in New York, but in a lot of places.
Yeah, like in most places in the U.S., like the average house price was still in like the 200s. You know, whereas now it's in the 400s, and you need at least two incomes for the kind of places that these average 400 something houses are in. Yeah. 400K something houses are in. So
you'll see occasionally in the Discord people trade in these, like, they'll just post a link to like Zillow, and it's this completely, you know, just totally unremarkable suburban house, but it happens to be in like Menlo Park, California.
Yeah, it's like $3 million.
It's like $3.8 million.
Yeah. So I mean, you're already seeing the signs that, I mean, that's what inflation is, right? Like the US dollar is just kind of losing its cachet as a thing that buys stuff.
But it still carries this privilege when you take it overseas, you know, to certain places.
I'm much less bearish on the dollar compared to you. Maybe this is because I'm in Canada, but against most of the major currencies, the dollar is extremely strong right now. Like dollar yen's in the 140s.
But I'm not talking about now. I'm saying 15 years in the future. You think 15 years in the future, Americans are still going to carry this kind of like dollar privilege with them around the world, as Asia and the world at large. But I'm really talking about places like Asia and Southeast Asia in particular.
Yeah.
Continues to develop at a rapid pace where it's clear that the quality, that the infrastructure, all that is superior, like without a doubt, to America, that it's going to remain like that cheap compared to the United States, like or Australia, or, you know, whatever.
I mean, Australia is kind of a different thing. I mean, it's hard to define exactly what you're talking about, but I would say like, it feels to me like it's better than a coin flip, that the dollar will still retain that sort of high degree of purchasing, like a very high degree of purchasing power, to the point where somebody in the States can work a, you know, decent white collar job, bank up some money, take their million US dollars and pack up for Malaysia and have like a comfy life for several years. I think that's likely. Well, like, you know, 65% chance still going to be the case.
Here's how I look at it, right? Like right now, all of the Five Eyes countries, i.e. the Anglosphere, are all being squeezed on housing, right? Because they're all printing. And for some reason, for whatever reason, the real estate markets are all dysfunctional in these five countries. Everything's super expensive. And for the first time, like, it's kind of preventing people from, it's going to prevent a new class of investors from actually investing in real estate in their domestic, like, Anglosphere countries. And they're going to start looking overseas. And that, I think that capital flooding out.
You're talking about like a global investor class? Rich people?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I mean, not necessarily like super rich people, just anyone looking to buy any kind of real estate.
Well, okay. Even to take Canada as an example, right? Like, you would have thought that with the massive increase in home prices and the massive increase in population, that it would have been matched by at least commensurate increase in the pace of house construction. The pace of house construction has not moved at all.
Yeah.
Right? Population's like 20% bigger, right? And prices are like way higher. The number of houses that are being added per year is still like the same as it was 15 years ago.
Like when my family bought their first real estate as an investment, it was in 2010 and shit was cheap. I don't think that kind of thing is ever going to happen. Like the equivalent of my family in 10 years is not going to be looking in the US. And yeah, I think that's going to be.
You don't think there'll be another crash?
No, I don't think so. It's they're on the fucking printing train now.
Yeah, it's not attractive anymore.
I thought they were doing the opposite. I thought they were crashing the market with 7.6% mortgage rates.
I think that's going to go until something really breaks, and then they're just going to – the whole thing is going to start over again. They're just
we talked about this last time. Like, I still don't get I just didn't understand, like, why would they throw such a wrench in the core asset market, the core asset class and market, which is U.S. real estate. And I did a little reading, and I came across this article from, like, 1997 – in the New York Times when they still did like honest reporting, or at least a little bit of it. And they were like kind of, and this is the famous statement by Alan Greenspan saying, well, the reason we're seeing low inflation, even though the economy is red hot, is because even though the economy is red hot, we still have high worker insecurity. And the article was talking about how worker insecurity is like a major thing that the Fed kind of secretly tracks. Like they don't actually put out a worker insecurity gauge or measure, but they're thinking about it. But I was thinking, like, is it possible actually that what they're really doing is they want to discipline the workforce? What we're looking at is not peaches going up 3% or eggs going up 30%. That's not really what frightens them. What frightens them, I think, is the idea that Americans as a whole are just sort of like losing our mojo. And we're not grinding, and we're not fearful of losing our jobs. We're not trying to build careers anymore. We're like checked out. I feel it in my workplace, to be honest. Like the law firm is not what it used to be. It used to be like, there were people there on the weekends all the time. There were definitely people there on Fridays late into the night. Now it's a ghost town. I was actually joking today. We had a little office function. And I was joking about how like on Fridays, it's kind of like The Shining. It's just like if you go in on Friday, you're like Jack from like The Shining. It's just like you and the coffee bar guy with his little apron. And, right. And it's like and they totally understood what I was saying. I mean, like people do not even law firm partners. Their heart's not in it anymore.
Yeah, they're just chilling. This is a very post-COVID thing.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of people. I mean. I think after COVID and like all of this free money, like a lot of people are just kind of in a spot where they're fine for now. You know what I mean? Like they've kind of financially figured out where they're going to be for the next few years. And they're just kind of like in the groove. And then the people who are younger, like much younger, they don't really have any chance right now of like climbing onto that ladder. So they just don't give a fuck. They're like, whatever.
Like, yeah. Like if you give up on the house and family and kids thing, like your expenses go way down. So.
Yeah, they're just like, I'm just, you know, like this, the economic cards are not in my favor right now, so I'm not going to try really hard for nothing.
I'm not going to play.
Yeah.
That's the deep policy I'm talking about, right? Like, I just simply don't believe that the Board of Governors over at the Federal Reserve is basically going to throw a giant, just going to like melt down the housing market. This is such a huge thing to do.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think, dude, I think I mentioned this on the last one. I think, they're just going to start printing money again, reducing interest rates and pumping out QE again. Like at some point they have to, they can't just tighten into an environment where everyone already owns a house and nobody's building houses. Like that's crazy, right?
Maybe. Well, I guess what I'm saying is that I don't really think they're fighting inflation. I think what they're doing is they're fighting worker attrition. And they want to introduce market discipline. Like they want to introduce discipline again. Because workers are just they're just not. Labor participation rate is falling. Unemployment is extremely low because labor participation is extremely low.
Yeah.
Wages are going up. Nobody wants to work, so it's hard. You have a hard time staffing jobs.
So they're fearful of the thing of like a wage price spiral, essentially, right? Wasn't there recent news that like the auto workers or something, like the UAW or something, was asking for?
Yeah,
they were asking for like 40% over 2 years.
At 40,
they're just the latest to do that,
and a reduction in working hours by 20%.
Yeah.
On top of that. Now, like that's just their opening position. But
the pilots are doing that. UPS delivery people are doing that.
Yeah. And what do you? And because they smell blood. You know, good for them.
Yeah, and they can. You know, the administration's very pro union.
Yeah.
Good for them. All I'm saying is that I don't think that the Fed is a benevolent thing at all. You know, I think that they are serious. They're looking at America and they're like, yo. You motherfuckers probably need to learn a lesson right now, right? They're looking at this, and I'm like, you guys are not scared. You're not, like, the market forces, you're not feeling the wrath, you know? And then this is a very abstract to me, and then this is why I kind of told you about my buddy who lost his job. I'm like, to him, right, he's a casualty of what's going on, and there's going to be more of this, and they want more of this. They're like, these employment numbers are too hot.
Yeah, I mean, they don't say it directly, but they said, and you know, Powell uses the phrasing, and that will involve some pain.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, that was a year ago when he said that, and they say that interest rate policy takes about a year to a year and a half to kick in, right? So it should be kicking in about now.
If it happens,
as we head into the holidays,
or they haven't done enough, which is also possible.
That is true.
Totally.
So I mean, in order to like. Put the fear of God into people, the unemployment rate has to go up. Everybody knows that. But okay, so by extension, that means people are going to lose their mortgages. And then, like, do you think that they're trying to readjust the supply of housing by kicking people out of their own houses? Like,
no, I don't think it's that. I think it's like you don't want to actually break housing. You want to slow down consumer spending and wage gains and the psychology of inflation.
I think they want to put more power into the hands of employers.
Yes. Like they want the UAW to lose horribly.
Yes.
Like essentially, right? To lose really, really horribly.
They want every work from home employee who's holding out to get fired tomorrow.
That's right.
Which is like, what happened to my friend. He's a work from home guy.
They want to give them 5% over 2 years and 40 hours, and you stay at 40 hours a week, right? And that's a win.
They want people back in the fucking offices.
They want the labor force participation rate up.
Yeah.
And like, I'm going to sound like a dirty capitalist here, because I am. The 60s and 70s, and that wage price spiral that eventually there were kind of like, I think there were at least two or three kind of major waves of inflation because they never killed it off. They never completely killed it off the first wave or the second wave. And then by the third, things were so entrenched that even you know, Joe Schmo and the public was screaming that inflation was too damn high, right? So the concern from the public became, okay, we actually need to get this under control, right? And that in inflation became the primary concern, not employment. Like typically for your regular Joe Schmo guy, like their main concern is employment, right? And their own job. At some point, that narrative.
But I think there's something deeply political about what they're doing, which they're quiet about. Like there's a lot of things they won't say or they can't say. And I think part of it was in the 70s, in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, a lot of what Volcker was doing was to sort of buttress this sort of return to or this sort of swing towards austerity and, you know, a more right-wing type government, right? They wanted to get rid of a lot of social welfare programs. They wanted to bust the unions. They wanted to do all this.
That was because Reagan took over in
80 to 88. And then Bush was 88 to 92.
Yeah.
So the peak in interest rates was 81.
Yeah. And Volcker was Reagan's
Volcker
guy.
Volcker was 79, right?
Yeah.
To your point about the dollar, Nixon went off the gold standard in 71. So, and that kicked off another big cycle too, right? Well, have you seen that website? There's a very interesting website called What the Fuck WTF Happened in 1971.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
What is that, a website?
Yeah, there's a website. Uh-huh. And it just shows like a bunch of charts that all yeah. kind of like there was a trend. And then it just broke in 1971, and yeah,
it shows like a huge inflection point on like 100 different charts.
Some of them are kind of hokey and kind of bullshitty, but there's a lot that are like uncanny.
I mean, that's definitely when like prices went from stuff being in the cents and the single dollar range to just unfucking bounded, right? Where dollars didn't really mean anything anymore; it's just a number. Like that's when gasoline prices exploded. Automobile prices exploded, housing prices started increasing dramatically, and I mean everything just started going up without bound, basically. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, well, it was happening until the other day, you know? Like, I mean, I feel like we were in a period of sort of unbounded growth, but sort of this leveraged paper-based growth, right? Not like growth in a real productive sense, but growth in an Airbnb mini empire sense or whatever, or you know, buying a second or third investment property, YOLOing into stocks or whatever. We know the drill. But the point is, I feel like, you know, and I have this other friend who sells real estate in LA.
I've
told you about, the LA guy.
Yeah.
And you know, he's always putting these people into like $10,000 or $15,000 a month rentals, you know, in West LA and stuff. And I'm like, who are these people? And he's like, you know, one's like he's like, they're all like influencers. They're like fucking 25, 26-year-old, you know, Twitch people or something, you know, like, or
and this is rental
business expense. It's a business.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're making 50, 60 grand a month on just shit that you're doing online.
Bullshit. Yeah.
You know, it's not a big deal to just write that off as rent. I mean, I totally get that. But the question is, does that push out the, like, does that screw people over that actually need to live in a house?
Yeah,
like,
does that screw over a doctor, numbers, right?
Yeah, like a doctor who just got married and, like, needs a house for their kids.
Well, I don't know if it screws them over, but I do think that it pisses them off that people, you know, you have people who have trained their whole lives or spent their whole lives developing like a traditional career. I'm not saying they deserve that kind of money. Okay. I'm just saying that people don't feel good about that. I don't think like middle-aged, you know, workers feel good about 25-year-olds running laps around them.
Especially in such an in-your-face manner.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're eating up all the premium, real estate where, you know, you would dream to live and raise your kids.
Yeah, it's like one thing if it's a bunch of 25-year-olds that started actual companies that like made tech products that you can actually buy and use.
Yeah, then it's like more power to them. They're fucking like, little geniuses, yeah.
Yeah, like you're a garage genius, great. But if you're just some dickhead on social media and you're just buying up all, or your class of people is just living in all of the real estate that should be reserved for or traditionally went to like professional class people. Class
professionals.
Yeah, you're going to be fucking upset. It's going to like really tilt the tilt the social like.
This is like the squeeze of the upper middle class, right? You're getting squeezed by like the 0.1% or 0.01 percenter influencer
type. But that's the thing. I think it's true that there is this old school hierarchy where I think people are kind of okay with a certain kind of 0.01 percenter. Yeah. But look, he's telling me like it's literally he's like, I can't, you know, he's like, here's a clue as to who it is. It's one of those types of like e-girls with that goes online and there's like a little dog nose on her and two cat ears and then a little, you know, someone pays $5 and a hamburger pops up and she's like, you know, and then ice cream like that shit, like a crazy person.
Yeah.
And they're living in like a $10,000 a month rental in LA, you know, like.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is why the Fed is like trying to tighten.
Yeah, they're trying to tighten the screws on the.
I don't know. Is that like the subject of monetary policy? I don't know. That to me is social commentary. But
well, the problem is it's not just the Twitch streamer; it's all the people that are feeding burgers to these people. Through the
push. Yeah, why
are these people at home doing this? Because they're not out working.
The same problem.
This particular dynamic will not be quote unquote fixed through interest rate hikes or cuts. This is something else.
I do think that the higher rate regime is trying to move us back into a disciplinarian economy, and I feel like
this was
a free for all. Like we're in an economy that's a free for all, and there's no discipline. In fact, the less discipline you have, and the more flexibility. And more chaotic energy you have, probably the better off you are.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's because if you don't have something you're saving towards or some kind of goal, then that all that extra, all that money that would have been saved or would have been spent on repaying some kind of loan is just free cash flow, right? You can just blow it on shit and not really feel bad about it because it's so far out of reach.
Yeah, like a whole bunch of new outfits you can show off on TikTok.
Yeah, like instead of $200,000 for a down payment on a house, that, you know.
Yeah,
you go on a bunch of trips so you can show them on Instagram.
Go on a bunch of
Instagram stories.
Like you kind of get the same dopamine hit for fewer dollars.
Yeah, and also that $200,000 next year is going to be $220,000. Next year is going to be $250,000. Yeah. Going to be $300,000. Going to be $350,000.
I do think though, just sort of doing a postmortem on what happened to my friend is I do think that there was a plethora of jobs that are very bubbly, frothy type jobs.
Yeah.
Digital marketing type stuff.
Oh, I had one of those jobs.
Yeah, like
in 2008.
Yeah, and look, these jobs are paying like deep into the 200, sometimes 300.
So in 2008, I was making $150,000 doing a social media / marketing job.
That would easily pay the 200.
That would be 200. That would be close to $250,000 today.
Yeah.
According to inflation and just.
Dude, even us lawyers look at that and are like, what?
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
We got to go through fucking 3 years of law school, which is very expensive. We got to take the fucking bar.
Yeah.
We have to polish a lot of chrome to get into the top law firms. And even then, your first year, you're not making 200. I mean, with bonus you are, but. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the other thing is you're working your fucking ass off. And you have a very serious job. Yes. Like, it's very serious. You get yelled at, you know, all this shit. Oh, yeah.
And there's like serious shit on the line, right?
I'll tell you. Yeah. So I've told the story before, but that's the job that I got fired from or laid off from. It was a Hollywood job. It was an entertainment industry / internet job. I literally worked in Hollywood. The interview process was basically just getting drunk with my friend and like talking to the fucking hiring manager. And that was, you know, clearly the sign of a top in the market.
Yep.
And when I got shit canned, I didn't really think anything of the larger context that it was in, but I just knew that I probably wasn't going to get another job like that. And that's why I started my company, how I started my company. So, I mean, it happened in 2001. It happened in 2008. It's happening again right now.
See, unlike Teens Buddy, you got that lesson at a time in life where you had no liability structure.
No liability whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, this doesn't mean anything much to you because that was just a thing that happened.
Yeah.
That was,
it
was almost a good thing that happened to me.
Yeah. Yeah. But right? I think the thing that's scary is that if these bubbles go on for too long, what's really scary is that you get yourself into a very high paying digital marketing job that pays $230,000 with a bonus. Job.
You think that shit's normal.
You think it's going to go on forever.
Exactly. You structure a long-term lifestyle around this that involves a 30-year mortgage.
Yes.
And you know, locking yourself into a whole path for your children with private school tuition and all this stuff. Yes. And then you're budgeting, you're taking two vacations a year abroad.
So I will say there is a path out of that situation, and it's the path that I took. But it involves an incredible amount of work and risk.
And skill.
And skill.
That's the skill part of the
part. It's not guaranteed. It's balls. It's not guaranteed. It's balls.
That you will get out of it, right?
What's that?
Like, it's not guaranteed that he's going to, like, if he just goes down that path, that it's going to be successful.
He will almost certainly not find another job that pays as much. Like, he might be able to find a job that pays 75, 66% as much. Fairly quickly, but that's a huge amount of money.
Problem is that so many companies right now are in a hiring freeze and they're actually in stealth layoff mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's so
nobody's looking at shit. You can submit a resume and you'll never hear back.
Yeah. So that's exactly what I ran into in 2008/2009.
No one's hiring. Right?
No one's hiring. Like I would get interviews because I had a decent resume and I had a pretty long work history, including like in college and all that stuff. So I had like a few years of work experience, and I, you know, I was competent at my job and stuff. So it wasn't like I couldn't get an interview, but nobody would even entertain the thought of paying me 150 grand.
Yeah.
Again, you know, yeah. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Basically. That's why, I mean, I really think that these bubbles are super damaging, especially this, whatever this bubble, like, we don't even know where we are in the cycle of the bubble, but like, clearly there's a bubble. And
yeah, we're like in the third inning of it.
You think so? I mean, you think there's still a ways to go?
We're about one third of the way through.
Through the popping of the bubble or through the bubble cycle? Because one third of the way through suggests it's going higher still.
It started in November of 21, and then it really kept going in 22 when the market started tanking. And so that's what, like, it's been a year and change, something like that.
That might be very tech specific, right? Like the general economy, unemployment rate, economy wide unemployment rate is still very, very low. But I think that's the thing. It's kind of a white collar recession, and the white collar recession has been on for a while.
Actually, it's already August.
You're talking about a real estate bubble, right? I'm talking about this mega bubble of everything where I think that there is a class of jobs that was paying
too much.
And
for bullshit. Yes.
And that is, I feel like that is coming to a sort of permanent end.
So this is like the day in the life as a day in my life as a product manager at LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Well, hold on. So we were in a very similar situation in 2008, but that was before QE and all this insanity with the zero interest rate policy. Okay, like we're post ZIRP, right? So this can happen again, but then you know exactly what they're going to do, which is start QE and then start up ZIRP again, and then they're going to push it further down the road and try to inflate it again. Like in 2008, that wasn't, like, nobody knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, I feel like your impetuousness on this is exactly what Powell is trying to kill. Meaning, I feel like the market is you. Like everyone in the market with a brain is like, they can't do this. They're not going to do this.
Well, okay.
And Powell is like, no, we're going to fucking do it.
Okay, look at SVB as the example, right? Because there was something broke.
Yeah, but the fix,
but the fix for SVB was very, very specific. Very, very specific to SVB. It was not a generalized rates to zero. They kept hiking.
Right. Well, they bailed out the depositors, which I think is fine.
Which is fine. Right?
I think that's fine.
Like a specific bank term financing facility or whatever, bank term repo facility.
But the shareholders of SVB and the management
got
fucked.
Yeah,
the
shareholders got wiped.
And for any bank to actually tap that is actually quite punitive, right? To tap the bailout facility is actually quite punitive. So it was a very limited sort of specific fix for a specific problem.
It wasn't an 08 style bailout. This was a managed insolvency.
It was if you think about 08, like before 08 happened, Bear Stearns went down. Right in March, and the fix was JP Morgan's just going to bail them out. Right, it was still narrow at that point. It wasn't until TARP that, you know, 7 months later that things really got okay. Uncle Sam's really stepping in now. Right, so maybe we're just halfway there. I don't know. I tend to think that at each crisis will look a little bit different. So I'm a little bit more skeptical in like the generalized, okay, cut rates all to zero and that sort of thing, but could happen. Could get bad enough for that.
I guess I'm saying, Mike, is that there has already been enough chaos and, you know, again, like today, front page of Wall Street Journal, they're like, commercial real estate is in a doom loop, right? They're like, this is actually real. This is actually going to happen. Yeah. There is a lot of there's a lot of shit that's being caused by this rate policy, and these motherfuckers keep going straight ahead. And so my point was, this can't just be about the CPI. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not just fighting CPI. There's deep policy involved in this. Like, because there's so much that's breaking now that if they were going, if they were the old Fed that just lowered rates immediately when there's any trouble, they would have done it already. That's what I think. And I feel like they're serious this time. And everything he said is like serious. Like we're not,
I don't think there's been enough damage. Like it's not that they don't want any damage. It's just that once it gets bad enough, they like have the formula to rescue things again. Right. They just want things to get bad enough that they send the signal and some people get hurt and then they can step in and like rescue the people that need to be rescued. Cause dude, like think about what the alternative is, right? Like everybody's retirement will just get wiped out. All of the real estate will crash. People will lose all of their homes and like commercial real estate will crash and all of the regional banks will just go insolvent and like unemployment will shoot to the roof. And then, I mean, and the government will go broke because it has to borrow at like 8% to like fund trillions upon trillions. They can't just let all that happen.
Well, right? There is something offsetting that, right? Which is that as things break, the people get more desperate and they start clamoring for jobs and work. You know, it's like they, you know, you literally go outside, like it, like their dream, in my opinion, is for us to start wearing like barrels with suspenders with a sign that says "We'll work for dinner." We'll work for dinner. Yeah. I'll barter labor for food. Right? Like that's their dream.
That is the basic arrangement, actually.
Wearing a barrel and saying "I'll work for apples."
I mean, that's like a very.
I brought my own apple container. It's right. Doubling as my work. Workwear.
I mean, well, one thing that enables them to be serious is that honestly, there's very little generalized damage.
It's not enough. People aren't scared. Enough.
Unemployment is really low, and the value of we saw a chart the other day. The average American homeowner as a whole, right? The amount of how homeowners' equity compared to the amount of debt that they have right now is at like a historic high.
And have you seen they never bring this up, but have you seen the labor force participation rate? It's just
it's low. It ticked up a little bit recently in the last print, but it's still
but long term over medium term, like over the past 15 years,
it drops every year.
Yeah, that was
is? That's just people saying fuck it. I'm just going to own real estate and buy stocks.
You know what though? Because this and this is kind of like showing you the somewhat nonsensical nature of some of this sometimes. Because the participation rate was a big topic in the past as well, especially during like the Yellen Fed, right? And one of her big things was that she wanted the participation rate to go higher because there was a concern that the economy was so weak that people are giving up on finding jobs and they wanted to bring people back in to the labor force.
Right. I don't think that's what was going on.
And she was,
I think she was wrong.
They were using that argument to justify increased easing or staying easy for longer. To get people into the right,
totally, and it didn't work. It kept going down,
and now it's the other way around.
Yes,
they're hiking to get people in
because they realized what's going on.
Right? Yeah, it's
that people were like, "Fuck it, I don't need to work. I'm just gonna buy real estate and fucking do passive income shit,
or just play video games all day."
Yeah,
that's the other.
I think that there are people who aren't in the labor force not because they've given up, but because they're like, I got other ways to make money.
You know,
access to cheap crypto scamming
was like the peak of that, right? Like you think about like the sort of influencers renting a place for $12,000 or $15,000 a month. That felt a lot of that was crypto powered in 2021.
Yeah, it was.
Dude, I think it's an econ. I think it was an economy where it really rewarded stupid risk takers.
I think so.
Shitcoins. Yes.
And it people with absolutely no fucking discipline were getting rewarded.
Yes, because
they were taking
dumb risk and making
without
money.
Realizing what the big picture was, they were acting in accordance with the big picture, which is we're living in a friction-free economy.
Speaking of which, do you know what I just learned today? The guy who bought my business, my company, the loan that he used to buy my company was an adjustable rate loan.
Oh my God.
So it's been ratcheting up the last 2 years and he's not in a very good spot right now.
Do you still get calls from this guy?
I refuse to talk to him because I just don't care. But he like texts my business partner every once in a while, and my business partner talks to him occasionally.
Is it sad?
It's not sad. It's just like this guy just wasn't very savvy about basic shit like interest rates, you know? Whereas like every single thing that we did when we ran the business was, it's a recession business. So everything we did was all driven by dollars and cents and P&L.
Yeah.
You know, like without any exception, every single thing we did had to be profitable or else we didn't feel comfortable with it. Yeah.
To be fair, I do feel like I was on my co-op board, and we were doing this huge window replacement. Windows are fucking expensive, by the way.
They're very super expensive.
We're going to replace every window in the building.
And, yeah, and it's all or none either.
It's all like, or none. And yeah,
you can't just do like half the windows.
Yeah, it was $1 million project. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, they had been doing this ongoing special assessment to try and build up the funds. And I was like, yo, like, this is going to take so long that we're going to be chipping in, and then there are going to be people who sell before they even get their windows installed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So why don't you just borrow the fucking money and we'll pay off the loan instead of saving it like a bunch of chumps?
Yeah.
I'm like, look at the interest rate. It's super fucking low. You guys are idiots. Yeah, and everyone agreed with me. People were applauding. Because I stood up. I was like that guy in that, you know, in that painting.
You started seeing like the Star Spangled Banner.
That Norman Rockwell painting.
Right. That's
the Bible of my heart. Take the loan.
With the jacket.
Yeah with the jacket. And they were clapping because they were like, yeah, like, why don't you just borrow the money? People who didn't borrow money, people were like, you're fucking idiots. Like, why would you just sit there and save like a chump? You know? And I understand that because it was true. And then we got the window project done, and it made it a lot easier for me to sell my
probably place. Saved on taxes somehow, too.
Yeah.
Maybe. Well, maybe. I don't know.
Out here we have HOAs. I'm not really sure how it works with co-ops, but yeah, I mean, I forgot what point we were on. But,
well, I was just saying that it was definitely a time where the answer was borrow the money.
Oh yeah. This guy borrowed a shitload of money on an adjustable rate, and he just didn't understand that shit could go the other way. Like, it's not always going to look this awesome. Yeah, whatever.
Well, I think it's a new world, and I this is my point is like I do think that. I look at going way back to the beginning of the pod is like I search for real estate in Malaysia. I look at this shit and I'm like, the world is not going to continue where $250,000 USD is going to buy you that level of luxury in such a beautiful part of the world. It's not, you know, it's not always going to be like this. I can't imagine that this is going to be true 15 years from now.
I mean, that's, I mean, not in that spot.
But it might be somewhere else.
Not in that particular spot.
Well, there's only so many spots on Earth, I'm saying, you know.
Yeah, Earth is pretty big. I don't know.
Well, I'm talking about, you know, I'm talking about Asia. I'm talking about Southeast Asia in particular. And I'm talking about a place that's going to be highly modernized.
Yeah,
and
it's
going to feel like an upgrade. I think, as an American, you'd be like, this is new and better.
In that respect, Malaysia is in a sweet spot, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty decently developed, especially the major cities, but it's not that expensive.
Well,
if you want to buy a place in Singapore, it's like prepare to shell.
Singapore is obviously super limited on real estate, but you have to remember in places that aren't fully developed yet, there is still a market response to rising prices. Which is supply will also go up, right? So if you have a bunch of capital that's being printed in the Anglosphere and is getting crowded out because of the lack of like construction in the domestic real estate markets, it will go overseas and then stimulate growth in places like Malaysia and
Vietnam.
Southeast Asia.
I bet you Vietnam is going through like massive buildings.
I'm just saying that as an American, you know, people...
So I still
don't understand... Like, as an American, it still boggles my mind that people immigrate to America, especially from Asia. Because I'm like, I go to Asia, and I'm like, your cities are better than ours. It's no competition. They're better than ours. Our cities suck, and you know it.
It's just momentum, dude. I mean, it's
salaries. It's the salaries.
It's strict salaries.
I mean, if you want to get rich, if you want to actually be rich, best place in the world is still America. And that's not changing for a while.
If you want to earn, if you want to earn high value cash, if you want to live a good lifestyle, you don't want to come here,
right? That's
there's also if you want to make money to send back home somewhere.
Depending. I mean, depends on what industry you're in. But honestly, if you're a tech guy, right, and you have some coding skills, you're still way better off.
There's no competition.
You're just going to earn multiples more here.
Yes,
and you are there, but you're trapped. You got to live here, and it's super fucking expensive, and you don't get shit for your money, and you pay a shitload of taxes.
Yeah, and you know you have to walk by like the sort of camps and whatever on your way to work, you know, and like there's
and worry that you might have to get sent to one.
Yeah, well, there's also that.
Yeah.
So you know, every time you walk by, you're just kind of like seeing a potential future for you. But it's people need money, man.
Yeah, the U.S. is still one of the only places where the workers can actually participate in the capital appreciation side of things. So that's still one advantage that the U.S. has. Also, the actual salaries compared to like taxes that you have to pay are
so
pretty
high.
So you can remit money back to where you're from. Yes. So there's a bunch. I mean, there's still a bunch of stuff going, but the problem is you can't. Like, it's going to be harder and harder to
the
buy.
The deal is
a nice house.
The deal is
in America.
In America.
That's why I say. So this is my point. Is I think that there's an arbitrage going on now, which is earn your money here, but buy a house somewhere else.
Yeah.
Don't buy a house in America. Go buy a house in Asia somewhere. That's my feeling.
Teen's going to move to Malaysia.
I am. I'm like, why?
In 5 years, teens moving to Malaysia.
I mean, like, white people have been doing this with Portugal and South America and all sorts of shit for decades.
Oh yeah, our other friend Steve. He was telling me fucking Portugal's like full of Americans.
Yeah,
there's parts of it that are just like Lisbon just has like fucking American.
They have the visa program as well.
Spain too.
Yeah, they actually tightened that up.
Okay, I mean the UK. Like one of the reasons people were upset about Brexit is because the UK to Spain pipeline got disrupted. Like people couldn't just like pump their fucking British pounds into Spain. Buy cheap ass condos.
The sweet spot about Malaysia, in my opinion, is. As a Chinese American,
you're ideal because
they speak English there.
Yeah.
And there's loads of Chinese.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I remember I've only been once to Kuala Lumpur, but I went into a bar and there were a bunch of like other Chinese people, but they were Malaysians and they all spoke English to us. Mm-hmm. And they were like kind of excited to see us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little weird at first.
Yeah, it's totally weird. But Malaysia was a former British colony, and so got English.
I didn't really understand.
We're similar. We're kind of like weirdly parallel diaspora, except they're just much more Asian because they're in Asia.
Yeah.
They're like Anglophone diaspora that never left Asia.
Is English like an official language?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, you know, Malaysians, there's a Malaysian accent, but it's not an accent in the sense of it's a foreign accent. It's English.
It sounds quote unquote
Malaysian English. It's Malaysian English.
It's a dialect of English almost.
Yeah, it's got like a sheen to it.
It still has a British flavor to it.
Yeah, it's got like an Oxbridge kind of twang to it.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I find the whole thing very interesting. I'm just saying, I feel like that's an arbitrage trade
right now. It is.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Because I don't think it's going to be so easy to waltz into Malaysia in about 15 years. It'll be a very different situation.
There is a visa program now, but that I don't know how long that's going to last. Like, I don't, you know, how many people take it up and so on and whatever. But I think it's still a little bit under the radar.
I think that their thing is they're developing so much real estate, but there's not enough Chinese buyers at the moment. I just don't think Chinese buyers are deep pocketed enough towards at the high end. And someone posted this. I think John Pang posted this on Twitter. Where? Oh no, maybe Carl did. Carl Zob. Yeah. If you look at, and this is all on PPP basis, right? Yeah. So, not nominal dollars, but if you look at the PPP household wealth compared between America and China, China, right? Yeah. Yeah. 1.4 billion people. The median is actually significantly higher in China than in America. Household wealth. Hmm. If you look at mean.
Median household wealth.
Median. Okay. Median household wealth. Household wealth.
The middle.
Significantly higher, like multiples higher than America. But the mean is way higher in America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, meaning, obviously, we so just rich. Have a totally, you know, skewed distribution of wealth. But your average Chinese household, and median is a better indicator of this, is wealthier in terms of purchasing power and therefore lifestyle and quality of life than an American household. We're living a substandard life compared to the Chinese. And when I went to China, I'm like, it became quite clear to me that that's true.
What is the median American?
Well, the median American wealth is probably close to negative.
Yeah.
Because most people don't have any.
You know why we don't know, dude? It's so funny you say that. You're like, what?
What
would that look like? It's because we don't see it. Well,
I
do.
I was just thinking that. It's like when I go to China, I probably do see like the median.
Yeah, you see, right? The median because it's a city. You actually go out on the street,
go out there, and you do stuff.
Yeah. The median person is the person that you're, you know, barking orders to at a restaurant or. You know, there's a whole invisible class that you're not paying attention to because we in America are so class stratified. We're only paying attention to people in our vicinity, in our class, socioeconomic vicinity. Yeah, yeah. And you get a little too far out there and you're just NPCs. Like, I'm not even seeing you. Like, you're not factoring into me as relevant data. Yeah,
you don't exist.
Yeah. But they're everywhere. These people are everywhere. You see them all the time. You're just not counting them. But if you do like an actual poll and you look at the actual median, Americans are doing shit. Absolute shit. And you see all that the Fed data is all the time is like, oh, most Americans could not meet like a $1,000, you know, emergency expense. They would have to tap into credit.
Median
$1,000. $1,000, dude.
Median. Okay, the average is 121 grand.
You got to, but the thing is, you got to adjust for PPP. So it's going to be hard to do, except for that graph that I looked at.
Okay, I got to take it. Yeah, I'm genuinely curious about this.
Yeah, but I was shocked. I mean, I did not know that it was like to a level where
30% are at zero or negative net worth or something like that, right? So in the U.S.,
yeah, oh yeah,
a huge I just get this feeling that. So, like, our conception of America, particularly us, like in this sort of like in that space between the wealthy and the, you know, the regulars, there's a small little space that I think a lot of us fall into. And, you know, we live in big cities and we, you know, we're not median, I would say.
No.
And from my I think that's a very precarious class because
our class of people kind of forced our way into it, right?
Yeah, but this is a class where you have to run to stand still.
Yeah, like it's not like I was born into, you know. Yeah.
Well, I think some of us were kind of born into it a little bit, meaning, you know, if you grew up in a good in a higher rent school district, and then you just kind of got funneled that way.
But you couldn't be a complete.
Like everyone in my high school went to college. Like fucking basically everyone went to college.
Sure, I mean,
like
my parents
did 4-year college, you know, and everyone
super
came out
educated. But yeah. But people specifically like us, we don't have like 4 generations of family in the U.S.
Well, yeah, we're precarious because
you could not be a complete degenerate and stay.
You can't be a fuck up and like still have your position in life. That's right. You have to be competent. You have to
But what I'm saying is, let's not pretend it was like a really, really well. Okay, because like you did your own business.
Yeah,
that's a different thing. But I'm saying like
Well, I could have gotten a regular, you know.
Yeah, you could have done it the easy way. Let's put it that way. And a lot of I don't think like I was really swimming upstream, man. Like I had the wind behind my back like the entire way. I'm just saying that wind can be blown out. Like it could just shift.
It could, yeah,
and I think it's shifting.
That's true.
And now it's the row is harder, you know, and I think it's blowing a lot of people off the island. And it's a precarious class of people. And I'm starting to see where we're in a transition where they're trimming the fucking shrubs, man.
Yeah.
They're like, it's overgrown. We have surplus elites. You know, the shrubs are overgrown. The place looks like shit. We're going to have to cut you off. And it's going to be sad. But I think a lot of people are going to get kicked off the island.
Yeah, I think the question is, and I guess my brother and I kind of just like forced our way into this because we grew up pretty poor. But I look at my kids and I am not certain. Like you know, if you take, 90% chance is basically certainty. I am definitely, I'm kind of like not really that sure that my kids are going to be able to stay in the PMC class and what the path to doing so is going to look like, right? Because if you try to plan out some kind of path for your kids to stay in this, usually it's okay. They have to get into some kind of like, what's the most reliable way? It's like some profession, law school, becoming a doctor.
Yeah,
dentist.
You know, accountant, that's toast. I guess dentist is kind of like same as doctor. Tech, I guess that's a thing, but we'll see 10 years down the road from now. Is that still going to be like, I feel like this tech thing was kind of like a one-off generational.
Oh, there was just too much cap. There was just an enormous tsunami of capital going into tech.
Companies became so dominant that they were just able to pay ridiculous amounts of money.
I think companies were hiring literally just to clear the market.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that, you know, startups couldn't find anyone.
Yeah. And just we're paying you to do nothing. So that
we're paying you to not go work at a competitor startup. Yeah. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. That's like that's literally it. You're staying in daycare. But I don't know, like in Toronto, the average detached house is 1.7 million. And that's including just like teardown lots, right? So if you figure, you probably have to, for a house you can actually move in, it's probably closer to 1.9. The average income in Toronto is, I don't know, average family income, 80 grand, 100 grand, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's people who rode the conveyor belt of real estate appreciation that can afford that. They had to have ridden the escalator
that's
up.
Right, that's right. That's actually
that ain't a starter price.
Definition of, okay, are you PMC or not? Do you own a house? Do you own a detached house? The correlation is probably decently high, at least among like a certain age group.
Yeah, I think that the creation of this sort of like landed elite, property owning elite,
yes,
is creating a degenerate culture of, in terms of like people's priorities. Like they're just like, you know, I'm going to live the good. Not to say I wouldn't want to do that. I'm just saying, from the perspective of like the Fed and shit, they're like,
yeah.
We got to cut these motherfuckers down to size. I think that's what they're looking at.
They got to go back to the hard work. Yeah. Hard work, discipline, save up for your house, buy a house, get married, have kids.
Yeah.
Do that.
So the thing is, like a lot of these types of people, they don't use leverage. They just own shit outright.
It's because they're all rich.
Yeah. So, there's not much the Fed can do.
Well, there's not much they can do about those people. But I think that more people are probably levered. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the Airbnb crowd,
the great masses,
the ones that need to go back to work.
Yeah,
they're like, you need to go back to
work. I mean, I don't know. Is the Airbnb crowd really that large though? Like to have that much of an effect on the overall housing and employment market?
I think it was about half a million. I think it was about half a million.
Yeah, but I think they're targeting the broad masses here, right? Because if you're gonna have a sticky inflation problem, it's gonna be through the broad masses.
Well, I think they're looking at who's not working, you know, like who is not going into the labor market.
Yeah, I mean, the UAW asking for a 20% cut to working hours and a 40% wage hike is that is a soft version of I'm taking myself out of the labor force for 20% of at least for 20% of the days.
That's bold. That's bold. That is bold. The same time, they're going to be they're also going to be like, you're not allowed to import Chinese EVs.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's close to double compensation. That's like fucking 85%.
Yeah. 1.4 over 0.8, right?
Honda Accord's going to be $85,000.
Yes.
Yeah.
American made.
American made. Ford F-150s are going to be one. Well, they won't even tell you the price. They'll just tell you what it costs a month.
Yeah, it's going to be
Have you noticed car commercials don't even tell you what it is, like what the price is?
Trucks are so expensive, though.
They're like Ford F-150 starting at $299 a month on an ultra low mileage lease.
It's just SUVs, trucks, and sports cars now because that's what people want. Nobody gives a shit about a sedan.
Those don't even exist anymore.
Yeah. Ford stopped making them, so they're just gone.
It's just, I don't know, man. I feel like, I just don't think this is necessarily a cyclical thing. I feel like we're entering into a new world. It's we're going into a new world. And one is we've been fucking tapping the credit for too long, which means eventually that bill comes due, right? Because you're basically borrowing from your future selves. And so we've got to, you know, we've got to delever. And then number two is the rest of the world is becoming a lot more competitive in the sense that, you know, you can't just be like, well, it's here, it's America or bust. It's sort of like, actually, America is just the place that I'd come to find a job. I don't want to fucking live here because it's
too expensive. Well, hold on. So in your scenario in which the Fed is doing all this stuff to sort of cut people down at the knees, so to speak, how does the U.S. like repay all of its debt then? You know,
I don't know
without
if
either crazy growth or crazy inflation, like you can't.
I don't know if they're necessarily. I don't know if they're necessarily interested. This is about Steve will probably know more about this, but I don't know if it's really necessarily about sovereign debt, like the government debt. I think it's about credit creation, like private credit creation, bank debt, you know, consumer debt. You know, that's not government debt, right? That's created.
Well, I mean, the government
pays interest too, right? So
they pay interest, but they also like kind of inherently backstop the mortgage market because they own all those. They own all those agencies that backstop the loans. And the Fed also buys all the.
Well, and they control MBS. The spigot on that through the interest rates, right? So they're just like, okay, we're backstopping it, but. The yield on those bonds is obviously highly correlated to what the ten year rate which is more or less under Fed control.
I mean, it all stacks up against the federal funds rate. So
if you're from the Fed perspective, though, the deficit and debt problem at the governmental level. Well, okay, so the first thing they're going to say is we are the Fed, we're not the Treasury, so they don't. They habitually avoid commenting on politics and stuff like that, so they try to do that as much as they can. But honestly, it's a problem for tomorrow. Like, it sounds corny, but it's truly a problem for tomorrow, and there's a problem today that they need to fix. All right.
What is the problem today that they need to fix?
Inflation.
Inflation and people not wanting to work.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I just don't know. I just feel like inflation's not really – is it really that terrifying? 3.1%.
If the Fed believes that it is, yes, because it,
really,
yes.
Well, the thing is, it hasn't gone
negative.
Right?
Ball on what they really want to do. That's my point, which is what you're saying. Well, what you're suggesting.
It's only gone down. It hasn't gone in reverse. So people are just still seeing the shit go up, and it's already at a super high level compared to where it was.
And I think
they've already said they're not going to go deflationary, right? They're
trying to get it back to 2 sustainably, right? But they know that, like, I think on some level.
But what you mean by that is prices are going to rise year on year at a 2% rate.
They're still going to get higher and higher.
But they're still going higher. We're not shit ain't going back to where it used to be.
2% is the target, right? Yeah. You actually don't want deflation. There's all sorts of bad problems that are associated with that. Yeah. But, I think they're on some level scarred by the experience of the 70s where they didn't kill it. They didn't kill it early enough, so they just had like a relapse. And every time it got worse, like the peaks were successively larger and larger. And it took higher and higher interest rates to corral it again and greater economic pain as a result.
I'm suggesting that is a very limited narrative about what happened. and that the larger thing that happened was a complete phase shift in the Western world, especially in the United States and the UK. Reaganism and Thatcherism. Yeah. Is that what it's called? Thatcherism?
Yeah.
A total phase shift in our political ideology and thinking and what, how we discern winners from losers and what we, what the government's role was and what it, you know, all that. Like, there was a complete change in thinking from a very liberal 60s and 70s back to an extremely austere, well, some will argue, more austere and free market 80s, where, you know, there wasn't as much safe, you know, social safety net. There wasn't, unions were defanged.
And
I feel like Biden is peak union, and unions are peaking now. And like you said, you know, you're seeing union action, you know, all across the spectrum, and they're getting more bold. I feel like part of this is they want to break that. That's my point.
Yeah,
I don't think that just looking at the basket of goods of the CPI is the story. I think the larger story's got to be that, you know,
to prevent labor from recapturing power, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To reimpose discipline
yeah,
on the people.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you had, like, post Volcker, it was truly an era of capital.
No. Right. So, but what I'm saying is that can be done with an acute shock to the system, followed by resumption of business as usual in the post 2008 period. It doesn't have to be like this long, prolonged thing where they destroy everything.
Yes. If it's the 1980s, I think the problem now is that America is not the preeminent power in the world. And our competitiveness is not where it used to be. It's like, I feel like what you're saying is like a 45-year-old man saying, hey, you know, I used to be a star athlete. I'm going to dust this shit off and get some new sneakers.
Like Al Bundy.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go out. And then you try, and then he gets fucking murdered. Ruptures his Achilles tendon, you know, right out the gate. And I feel like that's America. We're past our prime. We're not competitive. Not only are we not competitive, but everyone else in the world has gotten way more competitive. And we're not going to be able to. It's not 1982, you know? It's not or whatever.
Right. So, I mean, I guess what I fail to see, though, is how what is the thinking that the Fed is engaging in that makes them believe by hurting the capital base or the working class, you know, somehow like imposing pain on the working class is going to make them like more competitive globally. Like, I don't understand.
Because they work harder.
Yeah, but that's not, I mean, that, I don't, that doesn't sound very compelling to me. Like the beatings will continue until morale improves. Like,
that's what I'm saying. I think that
is what he's like. Okay. It's not quite like that blunt. Yeah. as Jay Powell said, there will be some pain.
There will be some pain. There will be some pain. I mean, we're talking
a couple of years
worth of pain, not like a decade of
pain. There hasn't been any pain yet.
There's been some pain.
By the way, guys,
this is not pain, sir.
Guys, do you think it's a good point at which we should flip over to the bonus?
Sure.
So
we're at 108. On the bonus pod, we'll continue this conversation. And if you want to support the Patreon, go to patreon.com/planamag, where we will talk about why I kind of feel like a Reaganite right now. Like, why I kind of support this, like,
dirty capitalist.
All right, well, thanks for listening, guys. We'll be right back.